This is Commissioner Bob Sarampier. Can you hear me on the line?
I can hear you.
Great. Thank you. It is February 28th, 2006 at approximately 1:30 p.m. This is the time for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting. I am Bob Sarr, Chairman of the Commission. With me here in Pierre are Commissioners Dusty Johnson and Gary Hansen. I'm going to go through the roll call for those folks who indicated to join us telephonically. First person is Melanie Accord.
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Beth Goodpaster. Beth Goodpaster. Bob Hill.
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Tom Geffel. Tom? Anyone from Mid-American?
Well, Melanie, obviously, you're and Dave Bloomquist.
Okay, do you know if Tom is a Geffel?
Oh, Gazelle. He should be on.
Okay. Tom Geffel?
Is joining the meeting.
Is that Beth Goodpaster?
It is, yes.
I thank you. Tom Geffel?
Tom Gazelle and Tammy Christmas.
Is joining the meeting.
Good timing, Tom. Thank you. And who's with you, Tom?
Tammy Christmas.
Okay, thank you. Erin Jordell Redlin.
Erin Jordell Redlin's here.
Thank you. Doug Idle.
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Mark Stacy.
I'm here, Chairman Tsar.
Chris Madsen.
Present.
Bob, is it Novotny? Or is it Novotny? I don't know. I'm trying to figure out. It's Novotney. Jim Wilcox?
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Jerry Heiberger?
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there anyone else on the line?
Mr. Todd Morris from ITC has joined us.
Good afternoon, Todd. With that, we will go to the agenda of the commission meeting. First thing under administration is approval of the minutes of the commission meetings held on January 17th and January 31st, 2006, and the ad hoc meeting held on January 27th, 2006. And I concur. Next item is consumer report, status report on consumer utility inquiries and complaints received by the commission. Ms. Gregg.
Thank you, Commissioner Sarr. The commission has received a total of 240.
Is your mic on?
It's on, I think. There, is that better? The commission has received a total of 249 contacts since the last report was prepared for the January 31st, 2006 commission meeting. 54 of the contacts involved telecommunications, 40 of the contacts involved electrical services, 47 involved natural gas, 1 contact involved gas and electric services, 35 contacts involved cellular phone service, and 31 contacts involved complaints related to the Do Not Call registry, and 41 contacts were related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 244 of the 346 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved, and 1,654 of the 1,885 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved.
Thank you. Any questions on the consumer reports? With that, we will go to the addendum to the agenda of the commission meeting. Under electricity, number one is EL05022 in the matter of the application by Autotail Power Company on behalf of Big Stone 2 co-owners for an energy conversion facility permit for the construction of the Big Stone 2 project. And a question before the commission today is, shall the commission authorize the executive director to enter into the consulting contract, and shall the commission grant Clean Water Action's request for withdrawal from docket EL05022. On the question of the contract, Ms. Kramer, are you taking that one?
Yes, I will. Thank you. They're trying to get Dr. Madden on the phone in case you'd have any questions for him. So we could take the second question if you'd like and wait, or if you want to take another agenda item.
Why don't we then go ahead and take the second item, which is clean, shall the commission... I want to make sure I have this right. Which is, shall the commission grant Clean Water Action's request for withdrawal from the dock? Is that correct?
Yes. And if you will notice, and Erin Jordahl Redlin is on the phone from Clean Air, that she did submit a letter on February 16th requesting withdrawal of their intervention. Staff will keep them on the interested parties list. However, they will not remain on what we consider to be the legal requirement list.
Okay, thank you. Any comments from you, Ms. Jordan Riddle?
We are requesting, requesting a withdrawal of our intervention. We don't have legal representation. So.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners? I will move that we grant Clean Water Action's request for withdrawal from docket EL05022.
Sorry. I concur.
So we are waiting to see if we can get
Dr. Madden on the phone in case you have any questions of him regarding the consulting contract or the looking to hire them as a consultant.
Then we will move back to the regular agenda and take up EL05028. In the matter of the application of XL Energy for a facilities permit to build 9.65 miles Flow Ridge to Brookings County 115 kV transmission line, 2.4 mile Brookings County to White 345 kV transmission lines, the Brookings County substation, and to add facilities to the White substation. The question today is, shall the commission find there is good cause to grant the late filed application for party status? And Mr. Hill, I believe you're online for the Brookings County Commission.
Yes, sir. We have to, the County Commission would like to apologize for turning the application in 2 days late. It was an oversight on the planning and zoning office solely on my departments. And we would like to join as an interested party because we are looking at getting wind power or wind energy in Brookings County, and we'd like to be on the list to get us the mailings of what's going on in our area because we have some permitting that we have to do at the local level besides your Public Utilities Commission permitting.
Great, thank you. Do we have any comments from staff?
Staff would recommend granting the intervention. While it was late filed, the commission wouldn't have taken action until today anyway, so there's no prejudice to anyone.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners? Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I will move that the commission find that there is good cause to grant the late filed application for party status to Brookings County Commission.
And I'll second. Thank you, and we look forward to working with the County Commission on the issue. Thank you for appearing, Mr. Hill.
You're welcome, Mr. Chairman. Have a good day.
Thank you. Next item, number three, is EL06001 in the matter of the filing by Mid-American Energy Company for approval of tariff revisions. And the question to make today is to approve the tariff revisions. Mr. Sanger, are you taking this one, Ms. Grant? Or do you want to hear from Mid-American first?
Mid-American has a brief comment.
Yes, please go ahead. Thank you.
Mid-American is requesting to add two new street lighting rates. Mid-American has this type of service for a 400-watt light, and with this new request, we're adding a 1,000-watt light for that same service. Mid-American used existing tariff, approved tariff rate information, developing a new rate. That's all we have to say.
Thank you, Steph.
Thank you. Mid-American has added several new street lighting price codes in the last 5 or 6 years. This is the exact same method they've used in the past. Essentially, they are just taking existing price codes to determine what their new price codes are. This is for a non-metered street lighting. And staff has reviewed everything, and we believe the prices that Mid-American is asking is justified, and we would recommend approval.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners for either Mid-American or staff? Seeing none, I would move that the commission approve the tariff revisions. Next item is under natural gas, number one, NG06001, in the matter filed by Mid-American Energy Company for approval of tariff revisions. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions? And this time, I'm going to go to Mid-American first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Melanie Acord with Mid-American Energy Company. Mid-American is seeking approval to revise its gas cost component for interruptible service. The revision would move gas costs from a prospective monthly average purchase gas adjustment, or PGA, when actual current daily market price with the goal of improving cost equity between the firm and interruptible customer classes. If you will recall, in 2004, MidAmerican filed an interruptible gas service plan, which in part addressed firm customer subsidization of interruptible customers in the PGA. The approved plan requires installation of daily gas metering and allows recovery of demand costs paid by the firm service customers through a capacity release component in the interruptible PGA. Currently, the interruptible PGA is set with first-of-the-month index prices, an adjustment for over and under collections from previous months, and an estimated capacity release factor. Prices are applied to the forecasted usage for the interruptible class for the upcoming month. At the end of the month, the actual gas commodity costs are tabulated for all PGA customers. Dollars associated with interruptible gas usage are credited to the firm PGA clause and debited from the interruptible PGA clause. The over-under collection is included in the interruptible PGA for the following month. Forecasted usage and over or under collections for gas commodity dollars result in PGA prices that are not representative of the current month's prices, offering the potential for cost shifting between customer classes. This is especially true in volatile and transitioning gas markets. American's proposed gas price component for interruptible customers seeks to synchronize the actual daily gas market prices with the actual daily in the interruptible class. As interruptible customers have daily metering, daily usage information is available for each interruptible customer and can be billed at the actual daily gas market price for that gas day. Change would align costs with those causing the costs, particularly within the interruptible class of customers. It also provides a market price for gas consumed by interruptible customers, representing the value of the system gas supply by the interruptible customers. Resulting charges paid by the interruptible class will be applied to the firm class through the PGA. I have asked Tom Gazelle, the manager of gas supply operations, and Tammy Christman, supervisor of transportation and special projects, to be available for any questions related to the daily gas market prices or the system supply, if you have any.
Thank you very much. I think we'll first hear from staff and then see if the commissioners have any questions. We appreciate that. Thank you for the presentation. Staff?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer. Dave was not able to be here today. He did give you a memo. If you have any questions for Dave, we will have to defer this matter. I know he considered having Bob handle the matter for him. It was somewhat complicated. I think he very, very briefly considered explaining it to me and decided we would probably be better off just deferring it if you had questions that can be answered from the memo.
Thank you. With that preface, I'll see if the commissioners have any questions for either MidAmerican or for staff.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a couple of questions. This is Commissioner Johnson. In the filing, Ms. Acord, anything about...
Michael Madden?
Is joining the meeting.
I didn't see anything about when customers can get out of this tariff. I mean, if they are currently interruptible and want to move on to a non-interruptible service, how much lead time do they have to get for that notification?
Tom, can you answer that?
Yes, Commissioner Johnson, that would be 30 days. Check. I don't have the tariff in front of me, but we believe they can 30-day notice move to a firm rate or a transportation service or
other service. Okay. And I want to make sure I've got this right. As far as it seems to me, there are two pieces to the notification. I mean, the first is if they are going to be curtailed, there's an email sent out by 8 a.m. that morning. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then I think it said that they'll list the hour that the curtailment will begin. How much lead time would a customer normally have? I mean, if the email comes in at 8 o'clock, when would they have to curtail usage?
Well, we can probably best answer that. We did have a curtailment in December of this year, and we gave customers 24-hour notice. That is usually pretty typical. It may be a little less. Generally, it'll be the day before. It's our advantage and everybody's advantage to give them adequate notice so they're prepared and have enough time to get off. In an emergency, though, we've kind of left that open so that we could do it as late as 8 a.m. that morning. And if we were in the middle of an emergency, then we'd probably follow up with phone calls and all kinds of notices to make sure that we got through, rather than just...
Now, so that's for the curtailment. There is also a website, theice.com, that customers will be able to check on a day-to-day basis to see what the price of the gas that they're actually using is?
Yeah, that's correct. The index that we will use the vast majority of the time is one that's posted on the ICE, they call it. That's the Chicago CityGate Index. The reason we like that index is that has developed over the last couple of years to be market proxy for this Midwestern area, and it's available there, and so customers can see that. And if they can choose to pass on Tuesday versus Thursday, it will help them make that decision as to which day they would want.
I tried to access that site, but wasn't able to just immediately prior to the meeting. What I mean, how user friendly is that? I mean, are customers going to need some initial help and figure? I mean, this is a great tool for customers to be able to help themselves, but is it going to be a tool that's going to be readily available to them from a knowledge standpoint?
Commissioner, this is Tammy Christman. The way that is an ID type site, however, information is available to anyone on there. I believe on the left-hand side it just says gas day prices for the day ahead. And if they would click on that, it immediately opens you up to the next screen, which if you page down, then you'll see all the Midwestern indices that are available to us. So I think it's just a matter of laying it out, click here, click there.
And how widespread is this kind of a tariff? I mean, are there other utilities in other parts of the country that have done this, had this treatment?
That have gone to a gas daily rate?
Yes, that's right.
I guess I'm not real sure myself. The unique thing for these customers is that they have daily metering. I would suspect that this will become common. If you have a good market index, which we do in the Chicago index, and then you have the daily metering, it seems to be a good match because for customers, especially interruptible customers, that maybe can make choices as to when they use gas, help them align their usage with the actual market price. As far as researching ones that others have done, Melanie, maybe you know the answer to that. I don't know the answer.
I have not been able to research that to the extent of that question.
Well, I think my final question will, I think the final question is probably more important. That is, can you briefly outline the process that you've used to let customers know about this change? And then as a follow-up, have you heard much in the way of concern about this change, about this proposed change?
We had... send out an email notice to all customers that are currently interruptible customers, and we followed that up with a letter stating that we had intended to make this change. And our energy consultant also called each one of those customers, of which there's 29, and was successful in talking to 28 of those customers. And they did not express any concerns, and some of them even said they thought it was something we should have done before.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Merrick.
Thank you. Any other questions? If you're like me, Commissioner Hassan, I Commissioner Johnson did such a good job. The few questions that I had, he took care of, so I appreciate that. Dude. Please go ahead.
I don't know much to blame it. It's an interesting concept, having been in a situation where I was it's my microphone.
Sounded like I was sawing.
I am awake.
I notice you're both speaking, Mike.
I think I'm blushing. I had an apartment once where we were able to switch to oil from natural gas, so I find this an interesting situation. I'd like to have it on my house so I could check and see what my alternatives are from day to day. I was curious a little bit further. Originally, I wasn't going to ask, but then Commissioner Johnson got into it a little bit. I'm curious if you have any experience. Commissioner Johnson asked of other entities, but I'm curious if you have any experience with doing this in other areas, recognizing that costs could actually be higher for the customer in this type of situation, because they're not going by actual costs as compared to how they are at the present time. Wondering if you have any experience with that. Are the customers paying more, less, or approximately the same in any other areas where you may have this type of structure?
I'll try to hit that a little bit. This is Tom Gassell. We did graph a comparison of that daily index. I think that went along with the package, but we graphed the Chicago index against what that PGA rate was. And if you look at over the time period, there's some spikes up and down around it, but it tends to somewhat track, and you would think it would, but it tends to somewhat track that PGA. A couple thoughts I have is much of the gas that's sold to transportation customers who are other daily meter customers on our system, a lot of that gas is sold to those customers based on an index, and the majority of those are sold at the Chicago index also. So large customers use that system also through marketers. As far as other things that we do, I know one other thought I had. When you talk about cost, that's where it becomes a little bit different because if a customer uses the same usage each and every day, I think the two will track pretty doggone close. But when the price spikes, when we get a real cold period and or a hurricane or something wild like that, where there becomes a disconnect between where that daily index is, so it's got a very high spike in it, and that monthly PGA value is set quite a bit lower than that, there's probably an incentive for that interruptible customer not to gas under the new mechanism. Under the old mechanism, there may be an incentive for him to use gas because his alternate fuels probably spiked also. And so if he's using a lot of gas based on that monthly PGA, when the actual experience cost for the utility is going to be higher, we're going to collect that from somebody. And so the following month, if the new index or the new PGA is set a little bit higher, and now maybe it's a little bit higher than his alternative fuels, maybe that customer isn't using gas the following month. So it may, to an extent, a customer can pick and choose when he uses gas or has good alternate fuels. It may allow him to, benefit from the old PGA structure, where this new one, by using market rates, he's going to pay for the gas at a market rate on the day he uses it. It just seemed to us that once we had the usage and we had a good market proxy, it seemed to be a good match to further, close the gap on any cross-subsidies between customer groups.
So there's no real definitive estimate at this point of whether the customer will be paying more or less under this structure. It's just going to possibly even out based on spikes of all fuels and everything being the same. The customer's going to at least have an opportunity to take a shot at reducing their costs?
Yeah, that's correct. Now, Mr. Jacobson had asked if he had suggested that after, I think, the first six-month period, what we thought we would do is track what the customers paid under the new scenario and what they would have paid under the old and bring forth that reconciliation and let him review it so we could watch it and review it and make sure that things were coming out the way, I guess, both parties thought they would.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions from commissioners?
I presume that American is comfortable with Mr. Jacobson's request, recommendation that the commission require that analysis after the fact?
With the reconciliation, yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Now, look to my fellow commissioners if we want to defer this matter or if you feel comfortable moving on it today. And I think we had a good exchange here. I'm comfortable as well. Then I will move that the commission approve the tariff provisions.
Second.
Thank you, sir. And just, would you want to include then Dave's recommendation of the report? Does that include the reporting requirement?
Yeah, and let's make that subject to the staff's recommendation.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next item is under telecommunications is number one, TC 060, in the matter of the filing by Mid-States Telecom, Inc. for an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switch access rates. And the question today is, shall the commission approve Mid-States Telecom's exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switch access rates, and shall the company approve or deny Mid-States Telecom's intrastate switch access tariff number one and or approve an alternate rate? And do we have someone appearing behalf of Mid-States? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Darla Rogers, and I'm appearing on behalf of Mid-States Telecom. We have been working on this docket for quite some time now, and we've exchanged information, and Mid-States has reached a settlement agreement with staff on this matter. We have not had an opportunity to reduce that to writing yet, and so at this time we are going to ask the commission to please defer the docket until your next regular meeting. At this time we will be able to reduce our agreement to writing and present it to you for approval.
Thank you. Staff, any comments, agreement?
Total agreement.
Sounds good. Then I would move that we defer TC-05060 until the next commission meeting.
Second.
Next item is TC-05180 in the matter of the application of Asia Talk Telecom, Inc. doing business as HelloCom, Inc. for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunication services in South Dakota. And the question today is, shall the commission grant the certificate of authority to Asia Talk Telecom, Inc. doing business as HelloCom, Inc.? Mr. Pinedo.
Thank you, Chairman. This is just a standard application for interchange services throughout South Dakota on a resale basis. The company has agreed not to offer prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards, and not to accept required deposits or advance payments without prior approval of the commission. The company has also requested a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402, print 8, as it relates to filing a current cash flow statement. Staff would recommend approval of the application subject to the condition that the company not offer any prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards, and not to accept or require any deposits or advance payments without prior approval of the commission. Staff would further recommend a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402, print 8.
Thank you. Is anyone here today on behalf of Asia Talk Telecom? Seeing none, are there questions from the commissioners? I will second. Next item, number three under telecommunications, is a matter of the approval of amendments to agreements in TC-06002, 003, 005, and 006. Which are in the matter of the filing for an approval of an agreement to a master service agreement between Quest Corporation and VCI Company, in the matter of the filing for approval of amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and VCI Company, in the matter of the filing for approval of amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and SPC Long Distance LLC, FKA, formerly known as Southwestern Bell Communication Services, Inc., and in the matter of the filing for approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and Metropolitan Telecommunications of South Dakota, Inc. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the agreements? Ms. Griff, are you leading this off?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Saar.
all the companies in the above mentioned agreements all have COAs with the commission. They were all properly filed. The agreements appear to contain no discriminatory language. There were no comments filed on any of the above agreements, and staff would recommend approval of all of them.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners? If not, I will move that we approve the amendments to the agreements.
Second.
Next, we're going to switch to the addendum for items number 4 and 5 under telecom. Item number 4 is TC-06004 in the matter of the filing by Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business as Swiftel Communications for approval of its revised service territory as a result of annexation. The question today is, shall the commission waive ARSD 2010-3203, 1 through 7, 9 through 12, and 23 and approve the revised service territory as a result of annexation? And are we hearing from staff or from Swiftel first?
You could ask to see if Swiftel has any comments.
Swiftel, do you have any comments? Do we have Swiftel online? Is anyone representing here? Is anyone representing Swiftel? I should check with that first. Seeing none, let's go to staff.
Okay. This is Martin Bentman of staff. On January 17, 2006, the commission received a filing from Swiftel Communications regarding a service territory boundary change due to annexation between the City of Brookings and Interstate Telecommunications Cooperative. The change is being made to accommodate recent annexations by the City of Brookings. The City of Brookings has annexed three areas described in the attached City of Brookings resolutions number 19-04, 44-04, and 80-05. Swiftel made the request on previous commission action in docket F-3555 and in the resulting decision by the commission on January 2nd, 1987. Swiftel has also requested that the commission waive rules ARSD 2010-3203-1-7, 9-21, and also 23. Swiftel is in good standing with the commission, and the change in territory is in accordance with prior commission ruling in docket F-3555. Therefore, staff recommends the commission approve the waiver and grant the amended certificate authority as well as the territory boundary change.
Thank you.
There is somebody on from ITC, I think.
I think we have Jerry Heiberger and Todd Morris. Do either one of you gentlemen have any comments about this?
No, we do not, Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you. And I should note, to hand a piece of paper, there's a minor typo on the stated question, and it should be stated that in the subsections under the administrative rule, it says 9 through 12 in one of the parens, and it should be 9 through 21. I assume we stand correct on that. Is that correct, Mr. Fitton?
Correct.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that the Commission waive ARSD 2010-3203, subsections 1 through 7, 9 through 21, and 23, and therefore approve the revised service territory as a result of annexation.
I will second. Next item under the agenda is TC-06009, number 5 on the agenda, in the matter of the application of Broadband Dynamics, LLC, for a certificate authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunication services in South Dakota. And the question today is, shall the commission grant the certificate of authority to Broadband Dynamics, LLC? I will ask, is anyone appearing on behalf of the petitioner? Seeing none, we'll go to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Nathan Sullivan with staff. On February 2nd of 2006, Broadband Dynamics, LLC, filed an application for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications service throughout South Dakota. The applicant intends to provide direct and dial-around services, toll-free calling, directory assistance, data services, and postpaid calling card services. The applicant has requested a waiver from filing a cash flow statement as required by ARSD 2010-2402, number 8, and has agreed to restrictions from offering any prepaid services and from collecting customer deposits or advance payments. The applicant has met the requirements for the granting of a certificate of authority. Therefore, staff recommends the commission grant the waiver request and issue Broadband Dynamics LLC an interchange certificate of authority subject to restrictions.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners? I do have to ask one, and it's a bit out of left field. I mean, this company's name is Broadband Dynamics. Is there anything that they're doing that's remotely related to broadband? And I, certainly we see some interesting fictitious names, and we just had HelloCom. And certainly that would probably not even make the top 10 of some of the ones that we've seen.
There is nothing in the application that would lead us to believe that they're doing anything out of the ordinary. My feeling, personal take, is just a name, and they're moving forward that way.
Thank you. With that, I would move that the commission grant the certificate of authority to Broadband Dynamics subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
Let's go back to the telecom dockets, being mindful that we have skipped the earlier question of the consultant in the electricity docket. So we'll go back on telecom to number 6, PC06014, in the matter of the petition of Northern Valley Communications, LLC, for waiver of NuStar Inc.'s denial of number block request in the Aberdeen Rate Center. The question today is, shall the commission grant the waiver request? Is anyone appearing on behalf of Northern Valley?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Doug Adol.
Good afternoon, Mr. Adol.
Just real briefly, Northern Valley has a very large existing customer that's one of the larger employers in Aberdeen. A little over a month ago, they had a major expansion of their facility, and they asked for 3 additional 1,000 blocks. NBC was only at a 59% utilization of its existing NXX. So when applying for additional numbering resources, NAPA originally denied this, but then shared with us that we could go to the commission and ask for a waiver. So that's exactly what we're doing here. NAPA has a couple of requirements that NBC falls slightly short of that we're asking the commission to waive. And the first is that you have to have a 75% or more number utilization or 6 months to exhaust. Again, we technically don't meet those requirements because we're at 59% utilization. But, yeah, it's a very large customer request. They're seeking 1,000 numbers right away and then two more 1,000 blocks over the next 2 to 3 years. So they're asking for 3,000 contiguous numbers. And right now, NBC would not be able to provide that without this waiver. So the commission, or NBC is asking for a waiver from the commission consistent with the letter that's in the docket. And we'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much. Do you have any questions from commissioners? Seeing none, I will move that we grant the, thank you. We'll hear from staff as well. Doug was just so compelling, I was having trouble holding back. Staff, please.
Just a few other clarifying points. This customer originally was a customer of Quest, and it currently has a prefix that is a Quest prefix. Thus, NBC does not have any of those prefixes. Quest has at some time turned several blocks of their numbers back. And those are the numbers that NBC is requesting for this customer. Staff initially had some concern about the 3,000 numbers needed. The customer of Northern Valley has sent a letter to Northern Valley that was forwarded on to staff for us to see that indicated, yes, that this customer does have a need for 1,000 numbers today or in the very near future and will need up to about 2,000 numbers in the next 2 or 3 years. I'm still not totally convinced that all those numbers will be used. One of the methods that we could use, and I think was contemplated in a previous filing similar to this that the commission approved, is that we go ahead and approve the 3,000 numbers and Northern Valley assign those numbers to the customer on a 1,000-block basis, therefore eliminating contamination of the other blocks. And if after 3 years those three 1,000-number blocks have not been used, they can actually be returned. However, also given the fact that we really don't have a big crunch of numbers, and I mean we've got ample numbers in South Dakota and in the Aberdeen Exchange, this probably is not a big issue today. I just throw it out in case it is a concern. But with that, staff would merely just recommend that you grant the waiver so NVC can receive those numbers so they can serve their customer.
Do you recommend the restriction, or are you just putting it out there for discussion?
I do not recommend the restriction. If we had problems with numbers in South Dakota, staff would definitely be recommending that. I just throw it out there in case it's a concern. That's something that the commission could do. I am not recommending you do that today.
Mr. Chairman, just one quick clarification. The customer has been an NVC customer for some time. The existing NXXs have been ported, and the staff is correct is that at one time they were Quest NXXs, but today they're ported numbers that NVC has in their possession.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any questions from commissioners?
Well, first, a comment. I'm somewhat disappointed with Mr. Singer's lack of optimism for the economic development of our state, but so be it. If we were going to do a restriction such as the one you mentioned, I mean, it wouldn't be required for them to exhaust an entire 1,000 block, and we could set some sort of standard like they do on the national level, that, what, 75% or 80% or 90%?
Once one number out of a 1,000-number block is used, it is considered contaminated and cannot be returned. If the customer is clearly going to use those 3,000 numbers, then they should have them. Northern Valley should have them and have the ability to turn those. Maybe let me provide a little clarification. I was indicating that we go ahead and grant the 3,000 numbers today, and as the customer needs numbers, then those numbers would be turned over in 1,000-number blocks. So in 3 years, the customer only needed 2,000 numbers, we would still have a 1,000-number block that is uncontaminated that could be turned back. Because it's my understanding is that, yes, and I thank Doug for clarifying the porting of those numbers, but these numbers were originally, Quest was the holder of these numbers, and they turned them back some time ago. I don't know when. I'm just simply saying that that could be done also. But here again, we don't have a problem.
You raised the issue of a reversion after 3 years. Would there be any reason that couldn't be 4 or 5 years? I mean, if their build-out plan calls for the use of that number in 3 years, I'd like to give them some flexibility in that time frame.
Yeah, the only reason why I mentioned 3 years is because the customer themselves mentioned we're going to need it within the 2 or 3 years. Maybe the commission would want to say 4 or 5 years, you know, give the customer time to complete its expansion and everything.
Mr. Singer, was the main point of your comment that numbers, that the 1,000 blocks be exhausted in order before new 1,000 blocks are contaminated?
I never thought about it that way, but yes, that's what I'm getting at, is we use the first 1,000 block before the second 1,000 block, or at least use most of the 1,000 block. There may be some numbers in a 1,000-number block that they don't want to use because they're too close to another number or something, but you know, once most of the 1,000-number block is used, then they can dive into the second 1,000-number block and then into the third 1,000-number block.
I would, Mr. Chairman, I would ask, you know, staff and the petitioner, if there would be any concerns about a commission motion to grant the request, but that 90% of each 1,000 block had to be used before a second 1,000 block would be opened up, and that at the end of 4 years, any 1,000 number blocks that hadn't been used would revert back to the pool. Would staff have any concerns with that, or the petitioner?
That would be acceptable to us, Mr. Commissioner.
Yeah, I have no problem with that at all.
I'd like to make that motion, sir.
Are you making the motion for the entire approval with that as a exception to it?
With two stipulations. One, that the blocks, 90% of each block would be used before a second one would be opened. And then second, that after, you know, 4 years, any completely unused blocks would be reverted back to pool.
Okay, then I second.
And I concur. Thank you. Next item under telecommunications is number 7, TC05223. In the matter of the application by SS Telecom, Inc. for a certificate of authority to provide local exchange services in South Dakota. And the question today is, shall the commission grant a certificate of authority to SS Telecom, Inc.? Mr. Best? Oh, that's right. Mr. Idle.
Thanks, commissioners. Doug Idle again, and Jerry Heiberger, the manager of SS Telecom, and Todd Morris are also on the line to answer any questions. But real briefly, to go over the application, SS Telecom has been a cable TV provider in the Milbank community for 3 or 4 years. Originally, they were owned by Stockholm Strandberg Telephone Company. I believe ITC gave notice to the commission around February 1st that ITC had acquired Stockholm Strandberg Telephone Company. So what you have today then is SS Telecom is a subsidiary of Stockholm Strandberg Telephone Company, and Stockholm Strandberg Telephone Company is a subsidiary of ITC. So moving forward, SS Telecom is a cable TV provider in the Milbank Exchange today. It's asking for this certificate of authority to become a telecommunications carrier in the Milbank Exchange. The existing cable TV system will be upgraded to provide full broadband, for the most part by a fiber optic network, and we'll be providing voice, data, and video services. The switching will be done by ITC. We'll be integrated with ITC's network. We'll be tandeming off SDN, and we'll be providing state-of-the-art triple play services in the Milbank community. In a nutshell, that's the application. If anybody has questions, myself or Jerry would be glad to respond.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll go to staff now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Harlan Best with staff. SS Telecom has filed to become a competitive LEC in Quest exchanges in South Dakota. Not just Milbank Exchange, but that is where they will principally do business, but they have requested to be a competitive LEC in all of the Quest exchanges. As Mr. Adol has said, that they will overbuild the Milbank Exchange, and they may co-locate or lease additional facilities based on an interconnection agreement if that does take place. They will provide local dial phone, long distance, digital subscriber line, calling features, internet, and other telecommunication services. They will have a customer office in the Milbank Exchange that will be open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. And there will be an 800 number for customers to call on after hours and on weekends. ARSD 2010-3203-13 requires that a price list indicating the prices, terms, and conditions of each contemplated local service offering be provided with the application. SS Telecom has stated that they will file the informational tariff when it is complete and prior to offering any of the services. SS Telecom has agreed to file a $25,000 surety bond, and they have filed for an exemption from developing company-specific cost base, switch access rates, and to use the average of the cost-based switched access rates for a period of 3 years. The company has requested that that portion of the application be deferred at this time. Staff would recommend that the commission approve the application of SS Telecom for a local certificate of authority in the South Dakota exchanges of Quest Corporation with rural safeguards, the filing of a $25,000 surety bond, confidential treatment of the financial statements that were provided with the application, the filing of a price list prior to the offering of any local service, and deferring the request for switched access exemption and determining switched access rates.
Thank you. Any questions for either SS Telecom or else staff from commissioners?
I do have one question, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Beth, how does that work? We would defer that exemption until when? And operationally speaking, what would be the timeline we'd be on? I mean, they're able to provide the service, but what... They're going to have to charge something for switched access at some point.
They are not presently operating and won't be for a period of time. So it would be, it would give them time to work on the price list and at the same time work on the switched access filing itself.
Hello?
Yes, please.
For them to work on the switch access filing, are you talking about developing company-specific information or with regard to the deferral motion?
At this point in time, staff is in conversation with the company regarding what the appropriate rate should be.
Okay, that's what I was getting at, and I didn't ask very good questions to get there. Thank you.
Mr. Adol, do you have anything to add or any questions or comments?
No, I don't. Mr. Best summarizes it very well, and we continue to talk to staff about the proper access rates, but we're not ready to move any proposal forward with the commissioners at this time.
Thank you. Any other questions from commissioners? Any? And I second.
I concur.
That concludes the telecom portion of the agenda. Now we'll go back to the addendum to the agenda of the commission meeting, EL05002, in the matter of the application by Arkell Power Company on behalf of Big Stone 2 co-owners for an energy conversion facility permit for the construction of the Big Stone 2 project. And the question that we skipped earlier was, shall the commission authorize the executive director to enter into consulting contracts? Ms. Kramer.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff. Staff has provided the commission with a memo requesting approval to hire two consultants, QSI and Dr. Madden. By hiring these two consultants, they would assist staff in analyzing and presenting its conclusions to the commission regarding the granting of a construction permit for Big Stone 2. At this time, it's hard to state exactly what the consultants will address, as Otter Tail Power has not yet filed its testimony. The staff will work with the consultants to keep their testimony from overlapping each other. In the proposal, there, you know, it may appear there's some overlap, and we'll work so there is no crossover or very little. Our intention is to ensure that Otter Tail Power has met its burden of proof as found in SDCL 49-41B and ARSD 2010-22. Dr. Madden and Mr. Stacy of QSI are on the phone if you have any questions of them or staff.
Thank you. Questions from commissioners?
Ms. Kramer, does this group of consultants have any experience working with, you know, the impacts of other energy conversion facilities?
Mr. Stacy, I'll let you answer that.
Yes, Commissioner, we have, if you, I don't know if you had an opportunity to read our initial proposal, but I will be the manager of this group of consultants, and I did this sort of work when I was the chief economist of the Wyoming Public Service Commission. In addition, Dr. Denny, our PhD economist, has a special expertise in this area, as she has a PhD in economics, environmental economics, and has worked at very high academic levels in this area also.
Mr. Stacy, I had seen that you'd had some work with the Wyoming Commission. I mean, I just wanted to verify that you had done some work in the past dealing specifically with the environmental and economic impacts of an energy conversion facility, and I think you've indicated that you and your team have.
Yes, sir.
Either for Ms. Kramer or a member of the consulting team, is there, I mean, it seems as there, and I don't quite know yet what, you know, environmental impact means in the state, you know, in the law. And so I don't know exactly where this question is going, but in your opinion, Ms. Kramer, does this consulting team have enough experience with air quality standards and in the environment, or is that expertise not needed because there's another permitting entity in South Dakota state government that will be evaluating that with their own unique expertise?
And I would agree with you that there is another entity that does have air quality permitting standards, DENR. And staff's intention at this time is to have available the experts from DENR for testimony if needed. They will not be filing pre-filed testimony, however. It will depend on how the testimony comes out at the hearing. If we would need them somehow, if questions were to arise, well, what do you look at exactly, or what did you do? Then, you know, we have been in contact with DENR, and they are available to testify should they be needed at the hearing. The other thing that Mr. Stacy and I have talked about is, again, depending on what the testimony is that's filed, we'll be able to explore a lot of that through interrogatories, data requests. If for some reason we feel something is lacking and more is needed, he can always partner with someone outside their firm that could bring in that expertise. However, that would involve then amending any contract we would have because, of course, the cost would then go up. But it's kind of in a state of flux right now because we don't have the testimony yet.
In addition, Commissioner, you'll notice that Mr. Weber, one of the other consultants on our team, has had direct experience in modeling costs of pollutants and pollutant mitigation procedures. And so we feel relying upon the interrogatory process that we will be and in association with the South Dakota Department of Natural Resources, we will be able to gather sufficient raw data to perform an analysis that will make solid sense to the commission.
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the commissioners? It looks to me like it's well thought out, and staff has put some controls on costs. We appreciate that, and certainly I don't think I probably need to say it, but certainly you know, we're always mindful of making sure that if there are potential for overruns, that those be addressed in advance, if at all possible. And certainly I'm sure you and the consultants will be mindful of that. At the same time, we're looking at one of the biggest decisions that will come before this commission. I think it looks like it'll be an appropriate use of funds. So thank you for that. So with that, I will move that the commission authorize the executive director to enter into the consulting contracts.
Second. I'll concur. It's a bit out of order, but can I ask a clarification question, Mr. Chairman?
Sounds it's not going to make you look bad after.
No, never. Heavens, no.
Go ahead.
I presume that this consulting fee is then billed to the petitioner as part of their cost. That.
Yes, that would be.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks.
It comes out of your salary. Anything above The overage is due.
Well, I'd like to reconsider the...
With that, I will look to my general counsel. We did move around the addendum and the agenda. I believe we did cover everything, did we not?
I think so, except for the announcements.
Great, and thank you. And I think under the announcements, we have a number of different meetings coming up. I will let folks review those on their own. I think the most important announcement is that we have a new information officer. Her name is Leah Moore. She is here in Pierre. And hopefully for those of you who are listening in, you get an opportunity to come to Pierre and meet her. But she comes with a wealth of experience and has already been an enjoyable member of the team. So welcome, Leah. Thank you. And with that, the meeting is concluded.